Now you will be listening to a program about a specific illness. And this is because you are starting your journey with this condition together with your parents or guardians. If that's not the case, then you're just interested in this and want to know more about it. In this program, you will be listening to a child or a young person telling us about their specific illness, talking about everything they went through since the first day they were diagnosed up until where they are now. You will also listen to the caregiver talking about the experience and the doctor that was treating the child. So sit back, relax, and listen to what they have to tell us.
Hi there, my name is Professor Mignon McCulloch. I'm a children's kidney specialist and I work at the Red Cross Children's Hospital. Thank you for taking time out to listen to our story. I would like to tell you about one of my little patients who developed a kidney condition, or a renal condition as we may call it, which consisted of her kidneys leaking protein into her urine, and as a result she then became puffy in the face. Most children with kidney condition may present with this as a silent condition. If you have a heart problem, you may be blue. If you have a brain problem, you may have fits. But if you have kidney problems, often there's very little to see. And in her case, her first presentation was with a puffy face, and a very clever GP or doctor checked her urine and found that she was leaking protein into her urine. The indication for this is then to refer somebody to hospital, to the kidney department, to try and work out why her kidneys have become inflamed.
Hi, I'm Kautha, a young RX reporter. I am here at Red Cross today with my mom for my checkup and a recording here at RX Radio.
I was a normal child until I was like 5. I went to school and everything, but then one day my mommy just saw that I started getting puffy, like really puffy, and she like asked me, did I eat something at school or whatever? So I said no, because normally my mommy puts all my lunch in for me and I don't have to go to the tuck shop and whatever. And then it like went on for a week, and then she decided that she's going to take me to the GP. And then when I went to the GP, he tested my urine and like there was a lot of protein in my pee. And then he gave us a letter for Red Cross. And then what happened after that, mommy?
Hi, I'm Kautha's mom. He said we must come up immediately. I asked him immediately. He said yes. So I was like, why? What's wrong? I thought this is just allergies. And he said no, she needs to go up to Red Cross because they need to do some tests on her. So without letting my husband know, I just came up to Red Cross. And that was a Friday afternoon. And around about 7 o'clock, and they were doing all this tests. And I couldn't understand what's happening now. She was like, everything was normal this morning. And then they said we must overnight. And still they didn't have any answers for us.
The first kidney test we would do is quite an easy one, and that is checking the urine. And in the urine we can see if there's any evidence of infection. We can also see if there's any evidence of protein, which is like egg yolk. And we can also look for any evidence of blood, because sometimes your kidneys are that inflamed that they actually leak blood into your urine. That's quite easy to check with a little stick. We would then need to put a small needle into your arm and actually take some blood, not a lot of blood, probably about a tablespoon of blood, and send that to the laboratory. And during these tests, they would actually then check the actual kidney function to see how well the kidney is working, if it's getting rid of waste products, which is what kidneys do. And if it's not getting rid of waste products, often those waste products will build up in the blood, and we can then check those levels on a blood test. The other important test that we also do is a kidney ultrasound or a kidney scan, and that's when they put jelly on your belly and they look to see what your kidney looks like. Your kidneys may have a blockage, in which case they may be big and swollen, or they may be small and shriveled up because they've had some previous inflammation or some infection. You may be missing a kidney, so some people only have one kidney, or you may have a double kidney, which is called a duplex kidney. So we can get a lot of information from jelly on your belly, and that's usually a pretty painless procedure.
The very next day, they came back to say that she is diagnosed with what, Kautha?
FSGS or something like that, something in the kidneys. And then they sent me off to E2, where I met Sister Miranda. She was the first sister I met, and she like explain to me what I can eat and what I can't eat. And I was like, I was 5 or 6, so I really didn't understand. So I wasn't like taking much note of it. I was like, oh yeah, and then I went to go play outside.
Yeah, and the shock was for us was like being in hospital, and I wasn't even at home yet. Like, being, yeah, I end up in ETO, nurses and everybody sitting me down, explaining to me she can't eat this, and she's getting puffy and puffy by the day. And it was so scary, because if you hear the first thing something, there's something wrong with your child's kidneys, it's like you're not educated, like what's happening.
So the kidney ward in Red Cross Children's Hospital is called Ward E2, and children who have got quite serious kidney problems would be sent there from the outpatient department. In Kautar's case, she showed a lot of protein in her urine, and so we were worried about a condition called nephrotic syndrome, which is when you've got inflammation of the kidney, a bit like an old person having arthritis in their knee. You can now have a sort of an arthritis, but in your kidney. So for nephrotic syndrome, there are a few kinds of nephrotic syndrome. The nicest one is minimal change disease, which means there's not much that's wrong with that kidney. One of the more serious kinds is something called FSGS. It's a focal segmental problem, and that means that that kidney is at risk of becoming so inflamed that at the end of the day they can actually develop kidney failure from that. We would then admit somebody and keep an eye on them and for a few days and see if they respond to the treatment, and we often start steroid treatment or prednisone for this. We would also look at a special diet, and this would include not eating a large amount of salt, which is a lot of good common sense in any event, because salt is pretty bad for everybody's kidneys. If somebody's condition did not settle and their swelling became worse and worse and they did not respond to our initial treatment, we might then consider something called a kidney biopsy, which is when you let somebody go to sleep for a short period and you take a small needle, you put it into the kidney, and you take a small piece of kidney that you can actually use and put under the microscope and see what kind of inflammation that person has. So important to do a kidney biopsy if somebody is not responding to our treatment, and that is what Kautar would have undergone. The diet, pretty important as well. Make sure she wasn't drinking too much and make sure that she wasn't eating too much salt. So most of our children fortunately respond to the treatment that we start them on, and then they would be discharged home and they would come back for regular clinic visits. However, a very small proportion of these children may actually not respond to our treatment or may present to us when their kidneys are already in kidney failure, and then they would need to be considered for dialysis. Now, kidneys do two things. One, they get rid of the waste products. Secondly, they get rid of the fluid that we drink. And so dialysis would have the same functions. They would, one, get rid of the waste products, and two, if you are in kidney failure, you often stop peeing altogether, and in that case the kidney machine works like a washing machine and it actually gets rid of the extra fluid that you've been drinking as well. So dialysis is not a cure, it's just a temporary way of keeping somebody alive while you support their kidneys. And at the end of the day, we would then be looking for a new kidney for that child or that adult. So there are two kinds of dialysis that we can use to support somebody's body while they're waiting for a new kidney. The one is called peritoneal dialysis, or PD, and that's when we actually put a tube into somebody's belly, into their abdomen, and we can then teach the family and the child how to do dialysis at home. It's quite a nice form of dialysis because you can be on the machine at night and you can disconnect yourself in the morning and go to school. If this doesn't work, then you may need to go for something called hemodialysis, and that's when you need to come to the hospital 3 times a week and you need to actually have your blood washed by a very large machine through either a drip in your arm or something called a fistula, which is when we put a little tube into one of your big blood vessels.
Like a year later, I was on dialysis. At first, I was like very like, okay, whatever, they put me on the dialysis or whatever. And then when they told me I can't drink water, I was like really moody. And then I used to steal a lot of water. Okay, I'll explain dialysis. Dialysis is a machine that you get when your kidneys aren't working anymore, yeah, and you're not passing any urine. So you get two types of dialysis. You get hemodialysis and you get home choice dialysis. But home choice I can explain to you like very well because like I'm more tedious in that one, if I must say so myself. Okay, so it's basically a machine and you get fluids, like bags with fluids in them. You get the Danish bag, you get the gazette. But like I can't explain it, you like have to see it in person, but that's a machine you get to take home along with everything else, the supplies and everything that the hospital supplies you with. Want to talk about it?
Yeah.
Then the social worker, Nikki, gets involved and she comes at the house to check out where does the child live, does she have her own room, where does the machine stand, and where's the boxes, because they deliver boxes every month, over 35 boxes. So our saying was in our house is it's just not Kota's dialysis, it's the whole family dialysis because we used to do it as a family. Abby and my son used to go fetch the bags at night, put in, and me and Kota used to wash her hands and do set up the machine. Meds she used to do with her dad, and that was our lives for 8 years. It's not easy, but as a family we get through it. But as any mom, I understand sitting there and thinking, I know, I mean, your child's almost like you put your child in a lease. It's 7 o'clock the night, your child's on the machine till the next morning. And that machine can give problems in the middle of the night. You phone in up to E2 and you rush your child in.
Dialysis, the one that you do at home, can sometimes block. The little tube that sits in the belly can sometimes kink at night, and then the machine will alert you to the fact that the dialysis is not working. We teach families how to reposition people, get them to turn around or stand up and get the catheter to work, and then get the machine to work again as well.
So the machine can, there's a lot of things that can go wrong over the experience that what we experience. Actually, Kota got the stroke in 2011 on the machine. And I'll never forget that night.
I don't remember anything that night.
Yeah, because she was stealing water. But then she was so young. She was stealing water. I mean, it's not easy on them. It was summer and she was thirsty. She was dancing with the cousins the afternoon. It was like a normal day. And a person was always watching, like, where is she? She was always be around you. And other children is drinking and having fun, and she was so thirsty. And she ended up stealing a lot of water that day.
Now, if you have kidneys that are not working at all, everything you drink will get stored in your body. And because you can't pee it out, it will then build up in the tissues of your body. The idea is that dialysis would then remove it. So ideally, you shouldn't be drinking a lot of fluid. That's really hard to ask someone to do that. I don't know if I would be able to do that. And so sometimes our kids will sneak or cheat and steal some fluid from the tap because they're really thirsty and they want to drink a little bit of extra fluid, but they know that their parents are trying for them not to drink any fluid. So the complication of having too much fluid on board is that then your blood pressure goes up. And blood pressure is something that if it is really high, you'll start off by having a headache. And then eventually your poor brain can't cope with the pressure inside the brain. And so you may actually have what we call a fit or a convulsion, or you may know it as a seizure. If the blood pressure is even higher than that, you may end up with one of the blood vessels actually bursting in your brain, and then you get what we call a stroke. And that's pretty serious stuff, but it means your blood pressure has been pretty high because you've actually been drinking more fluid than what the dialysis machine can actually take off.
That's the end of part one of a three-part series. We still have two parts left, so get up, stretch a bit, and go fetch you a cup of warm coffee. And when you're back, you can press play. Welcome back. We will continue with this program. Here is part two.
So the doctors told my parents, like, that it won't be possible for me to get a kidney because I'm a rare blood type, and if I got a kidney, it would like immediately reject. So like, I spent like most like 8.5 years on dialysis before I got my kidney.
Dialysis is just a temporary measure until we can find a new kidney, but some people may need to be on dialysis for many, many years, and our longest pediatric or child patient has been on dialysis for 10 years. The reason it's difficult to find a new kidney is because it's a bit like a lock and a key in that you have to find the right match. So you can get a kidney either from somebody who is in your family or a friend who donates the kidney. We would then do a lot of tests to make sure that that person would not be harmed by giving one of their kidneys away. The other way to get a kidney is from somebody who donates a kidney, and there are lots of various religious beliefs about it, but most imams, Christian ministers and rabbis would all agree that it is a good thing to give a kidney to somebody else, and so they would allow it in terms of benefit for somebody else. As Kautar mentioned, she waited a long time because it took a long time to get the right match of kidney for her body that would not actually fight her body. And so we call that process rejection. When somebody actually gets a kidney and their body realizes it's not their own kidney, they would then try and fight off that kidney. We have lots of new medication which can try and prevent this rejection. And so our success rate is pretty good, upwards of 95%, whereby we can actually manage most people and prevent rejection by giving them medication. The only problem with this medication is that you need to take it every day for the rest of your life, and you can't forget any of your medication, which can be really difficult if you're a teenager. So depending on where you get your kidney from, if you get it from a family member, then that's quite nice because then you can actually plan it for a certain day. Or we sometimes get kidneys from children or adults who have been in car accidents or who have died, where their brains have died but the rest of their body is still alive, and their family members have actually been kind enough to give permission for their organs to be donated to other adults or children who are desperately in need of the organs that they are needing. This can be in the middle of the day, but this can also be in the middle of the night. And usually, once all the tests have been done to see if the match is good, the doctors would then phone the patient to come into hospital, and that's usually a very exciting time for everybody.
The doctor phoned my granny, and then I just heard my grandmother shouting at the door, and I was sleeping, and then my mommy barging into my room, and I was like, what's happening? They're like, you're getting a kidney! And then I started crying. And then we rushed to hospital, and then when I got to hospital, I went on the machine again till the next morning.
What I can remember about that night is when Dr. Christelle phoned us. I was like, is this a joke? Is this a prank now? And I was like, down with the phone. And then she phoned my mom, and they came like, doctor's on the phone, open up, open up. And I was like, I was so scared opening that door because I was like, are we ready for this kidney? What can happen? And they were still shouting at the gate, open up, we must go. Dr. Christelle is on the phone. And she's like, literally on the phone. She knew that time I was scared because I was like thinking like, I don't know what to do. And she said, I'm going to meet you up at the hospital in an hour's time. I woke up, Kautar. I was excited. I was scared. I was crying. I was laughing. Everybody of the family came now at that time of the morning. When we got here at the hospital, all the nurses were so excited. Everybody was like, what's up with us? Is it true? Are you getting a kidney? Everybody was like, it was. But the next morning, then something happened.
Yes, I was on Polygam. And then I started getting like really sick, and I started vomiting and I started shaking. And then after that, like a half an hour later, they came to fetch me for theatre. And then I just remember them pushing me to theatre.
The patient would then come to the ward. We would do a lot of blood tests, get them ready for theatre, give them some treatment before they go to theatre. And then they would go to theatre, and a very experienced team of surgeons would take the kidney and sew it into a new position in their body. And this procedure often takes about 3 or 4 hours. Often the kidney starts working straight away on the table, and we can see that, and that's always very exciting. But sometimes the kidney is a little bit stunned and may be asleep and only start working after a couple of days. The patient would then go back to ICU, where we would monitor them very carefully. And once they start getting better and the kidney starts working, they would then go back to the kidney ward, to ward E2, where they would be managed by the team of doctors and nurses who are very familiar with children who've had kidney transplants, liver transplants, and even heart transplants from time to time. So we use various medications to treat our patients, and one of the medications is an intravenous drug called Polygam. It stands for immunoglobulin, and basically all this means is that if your immune system is misbehaving, you can give them an infusion of a drug which can calm the immune system down if it's overreacting, or alternatively can boost the immune system a little bit if the immune system isn't strong enough. And so if we've got patients where their kidney is being rejected by their body, we sometimes give them this intravenous infusion of Polygam to try and calm the body's response to the new kidney and stop it from fighting the new kidney, which is what we call rejection.
Yeah, the next 8 days...
were terrible 8 days.
Yeah, it was a rollercoaster because...
I was in a lot of pain.
There was such a lot of things going around.
And then I had... After my transplant, I was in hospital for 3 months.
Oh.
It was in November when I had my operation. And then, like, it was really uncomfortable at first. Like, afterwards, I thought things were, like, settling. But then a month later, in December, it's when, like, doctors saw that there's again protein in my urine. But then they thought it was from the old kidney. And then they decided that they're going to put me on hemodialysis so they can, like, slow it down. I was in hospital for the whole December getting hemodialysis, getting drips and stuff. But I was okay with it because I knew that it would be all be worth it in the end. And I was discharged a day before school started, actually.
So kidney transplants are very successful. The success rate is upward of 90-95%. We have in South Africa centralized the places that do kidney transplants so that those places have a lot of success. So for children, there are only 3 hospitals in the country that are actually doing children's transplants. And so those people, including the team at Red Cross, become very experienced at doing transplants. So the surgical success is excellent. The medical success, so as I've explained, we've now got new modern medication which helps prevent rejection. And the success in the beginning is extremely good. Factors that affect success long term is usually how compliant or how good the patient is about taking their medication lifelong. And that's often a problem because if you're a teenager, you may not want to take medication every day. And so it's quite hard work for the whole family to actually be working together to make sure that that person takes their medication every day and doesn't forget. And I always equate it to being a soccer player and training for the Bafana Bafana team, because if you don't train every day, then you're not going to be a successful soccer player. There are a few kidney conditions similar to Cowtar's where the initial inflammation that caused damage to her initial kidneys may come back in the new kidney. And in this case, hers did. And we again have some new medication that can actually try and stop this process from attacking the kidney. Kidneys don't last forever. Ideally, we would like a kidney to last for about 10 or 15 years. Some people get their kidneys to last for about 20 years. So anybody who has had a kidney transplant as a child will probably need another kidney transplant as an adult. But as I've said, we try and get that kidney to last as long as possible.
You just listened to part 2, but there's still one more part to go, so take another break, and when you come back, you can listen to the final part. Welcome back. We will continue with this program. Here is part 3.
So after my transplant, I was really excited because I knew that I didn't have to set up the machine anymore. And I was a bit sad because I kind of missed the machine, but I was like liking it more because I could do more things at night, go out with my friends, whatever. Like stuff that normal teenage girls do.
It was almost like a new life. I could go back to work. Our lives was a little cool as like normal. My son could join the soccer club. You know, things I get because she's not hooked on the machine every day. So there's no more dialysis. And monitoring her with the water, she can drink as much water as she wants to. And, yeah, it's like, it's a whole, it was just nice. It just, it was a nice, good feeling. It's like going through all these things, and the end of the day, the kidney's like working now, so we can do normal things as a family. Because on the dialysis, our lives was very restricted around, like, we couldn't go out at night, we're going to do this. These days that she couldn't go to school because she was too sick. But they don't stop there. It's just not when you get the kidney. Mm-hmm. You must look after the kidney as well. You're actually more at risk as well if you have the new kidney.
Someone gave this kidney to me and, like, it's not my own, so I have to take good care of it. And I can't take it for granted.
So what we do when somebody has had a transplant is we give them medication which suppresses or weakens their immune system so that they don't fight the new kidney. And it is a bit of a seesaw in that you don't want to drop the immune system too much so that the body's too weak to fight any normal cough or cold. But at the same time, you don't want the immune system to be too strong so that it then attacks the kidney, and that is what we call rejection. So we like our patients to come back and see us quite often. In the beginning, they'll be in for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they'll come in 2 or 3 times a week, and eventually they will be coming once a month. We never let it go for more than once a month. And the issues that we're looking for, we'll do blood tests to see what the creatinine is, and that's the waste product. We will be looking for infections because we know the kidney can be prone to infection. We'll be looking for rejection, which is when the body is fighting the kidney. And we'll also be looking for problems where maybe the medication is too strong for the kidney. So all those three things are issues that you can look for when you come to clinic. We also remind the parents and the child that if there is any infection, cough or cold or any other illness before the next clinic visit, then they need to come to the hospital immediately so we can try and deal with that problem before the patient becomes too sick. So just talking about complications of kidney problems, many children come to us with either nephrotic syndrome, which is swelling of the body because you're leaking protein in your urine, or nephritis, which is an inflammation of the kidney. And usually if it's picked up early and it's the common variety with treatment, you will settle down completely and you won't have any further problems. Sometimes you might have what we call a flare-up when you have a cough or a cold, which then stimulates the immune system and your body may then become swollen again and you may leak some urine. And with the treatment that we usually use some prednisone or steroids, you will then settle down completely again. In very few cases, they would then go on to not respond to therapy and at the end of the day go on to need a transplant. That is quite unusual, and that is not the normal case for most of the children that come to us at the hospital. We try and prevent all of this. And even in those who've had transplants, most of them do extremely well. They go home, back to school, back to their communities, back to their families. And in a few of them, they may have some rare complications, which may be a little bit scary. The good news is that at Red Cross, we are used to seeing all kinds of rare complications. And so when these complications arise, we will usually be able to recognize them and treat them so that the complications will usually then settle down and the patient will go back to having a fairly normal lifestyle. So all the very scary complications are not very common, and it's not something that everybody should worry about if they have a diagnosis of a kidney problem.
But every patient is not the same. Kauta's story is different, but a lot of parents can relate to that. Some children are stronger, some children bounce back, some children go home. After 2 weeks, they go home, and the kidney works for years. So every patient is different. But it's very important for the family to have counseling to get you through the process. And Sister Leslie helped Kauta a lot. Since she was a young girl of the age of 8 years old, and she helped her through the teenage years, and she's still busy with them, like how to cope with the medication. And they need that. Because every time it's like there's new children coming on board. Even people now in E2 sitting there, they found out today that the children, there's something wrong with their kidneys, and they think kidneys, oh, my child's going to die the next day. All they must do is just get on board, and very important, listen to the doctors because they are fantastic. I promise you. As a parent, you just listen, ask for questions, more information. They're willing, they're always willing to help you. some parents sound shy or don't explain. If they use big words, then you ask the doctor, explain to me more. I don't understand. I'm one of their parents, so I want to know. Explain to me if I don't understand that word. I want to understand. And Kothar's also, I was explaining to Kothar, it's your body. You also need to know. Maybe mommy's not with you that time. Then the doctor came. Then I come back and I ask her. And she said, no, doctor said this and that. So it's important to know what's happening. Don't be scared as an experience. Sit and ask them, what's happening? It's a scary time for them, and they use all these big words. I've been through that. I know the words. She knows all the medication. I know the medication. And because there's a stage when Kothar was much younger, I think she was about 10 years old, and then she was starting throwing her tablets away. Like, she didn't want to use the tablets. Like, you know, using such a lot of tablets, it makes you nauseous. You're not always up to using such a lot of tablets. And Sister Leslie played a big role because she explained to her.
Counseling is very important because we realize that it's very hard for a family who have a child who looks completely normal to then be told that their child has kidney failure, which may be life-threatening or may make them very ill, because the patients often look completely normal. So it's important to actually get the family to accept that there is a problem and that this may be a lifelong problem. It's also important to explain to the patient that they need to take medication every day, and we often see this as a team effort where the parents and the patient have to remind each other every day that they need to take medication. I think there are also enormous feelings of sadness, and so it's important for us to have both a social worker and a psychologist to actually deal with these times when people feel very sad about what is quite a big diagnosis, and the fact that they will probably need to come to the hospital for the rest of their life for follow-ups and checkups. The good news is that dialysis is not forever, and usually we do manage to find kidneys for most of our patients, but this waiting process and all the medication that goes with it can be very stressful for patients, and so counseling is pretty important. Family support also hugely important, and often people belong to religious communities as well who also support them, and we think that that's really all part of the whole process.
Some of the challenges I had to face was drinking a little amount of water, which ended up in me stealing a lot of water, which ended up in me landing up in hospital. And second challenge I faced was taking medication. Another challenge also was not being able to eat salt, so like chips and like normal thing a kid could eat, but I couldn't eat it.
My words of advice would be to trust your medical team, and by medical I include both your doctors, your nurses, your therapists, to tell people when you're feeling stressed and to ask for help so that we can actually implement that early, to share this information with your families so that they can also be there to support you, and most importantly, to become an organ donor so that you never know when your family member may need an organ. And by becoming an organ donor through the Organ Donor Foundation, the ODF, you can really help somebody else one day in terms of donating your organs to someone else.
The advice I would give to someone that's just starting out is don't stress yourself. Like, I know, like, as a young person, you're going to think, like, oh, my word, this is, like, so, like, too much information for a young person to deal with. But take time, you will get to where I am. Like, I know it's a lot to handle at a young age, and, like, you're thinking it's difficult, but it's not really. You just need time to, like, take everything in and just take your time to, like, absorb everything.
There's one thing about Kothar, they always call her Mrs. Fine. If the family, friends and family ask her, how are you doing? No, I'm fine. She's always fine. And she always have a smile on her face. It's actually that smile that makes me strong if I look at her, because my strength comes from Kothar.
My mom played a very big role. She was my, like, my emotional rock, like my stone that was always there for me. Like, without her, I wouldn't have been able to cope. To my mom, I would say thank you for always being there. Thank you for always encouraging me to do better and always encourage me to be strong and, like, to be this beautiful young woman that I am. I would just say thank you.
Thank you, for taking your time out to listen to this program. This was put together by RX Radio, a radio station by and for children, situated at the Red Cross War Memorial Children's Hospital. Please visit our website www.rxradio.co.za for more amazing programming. Enjoy the rest of your day.